time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Here we go, here we go, here we go.
And
hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome into another beautiful Thursday edition of Overtime. It is Thursday, June 25th, and the boys are back in town, fresh off of an Italian vacation. The Baker family back here in Sioux Falls. Very excited for a Italy recap. The best moments, the overrated, the underrated, the food, everything else that came with that great trip. A brand new hoodie across the table, and so much more. We'll dive in with Dustin Baker, Stone Baker here, as we make our way through a Minnesota Vikings Thursday, June 25th edition of Overtime. The Minnesota Timberwolves, not the Vikings, the Timberwolves are in the news, front and center in the NBA, making a massive trade this morning. And reviews are certainly mixed. You can be excited, Minnesota fans, but I don't think a lot of Minnesota Timberwolves fans are elated with the news, because they got a premier player, no doubt about it. They got a really, really darn good, another young guard to pair with Anthony Edwards, and now they have probably the most elite backcourt in the NBA. But they give up fan favorite Naz Reid, cult hero Naz Reid, and a guy that was projected to slide into the four following the Julius Randle move. Now they get rid of Randle. They get rid of Naz Reid. They give up a lot of future picks in order to facilitate a trade for LaMelo Ball of the Charlotte Hornets coming to town. Yes, he can be excited. Opinions are very much mixed out there on the big deal as of today. And I think we got another one coming in the days and weeks ahead. Jaylen Brown still very much on the trade block, trade market. More on that as we open it up and move into this Thursday, June 25th edition of Overtime. Hour one dedicated to those Wolves and Vikings. Brendan Sorsby will rank up the Vikings defensive units today, 1 through 5, edge, defensive line, linebacker, corner, and safety. We'll do that towards the end of hour number one. Also, the latest news from the NFL, jam-packed into a busy hour two, along with the NBA shakeup in the wake of the LaMelo Ball trade. The Charlotte Hornets are completely and totally pushing their chips into the table, guided by one Con Knipple. We'll dive into the Charlotte Hornets post-trade, the Minnesota Timberwolves, what trades could happen next, and other news you may have missed. And, of course, Major League Baseball and the World Cup. Team USA in action, Game 3 of the World Cup tonight. Got to stay up late, people. 9 o'clock on Fox. It's Turkey battling Team USA. Turkey can improve their positioning. Team USA cannot get any better or any worse. That's not true. They can't get any better or any worse seeding-wise. For the knockout stage, they're already there. They're advanced. They're the top seed in the group, as in Group D. But you can get worse in the sense of reckless yellow cards, red cards, injuries, aggravations, things of that nature. We'll dive in to all the storylines for Team USA as they've got Turkey tonight in the nightcap, 9 o'clock on Fox. Again, welcome in to the Thursday, June 25th edition of Overtime. Yesterday in Major League Baseball, Dansby Swanson, an absurd series against the New York Mets continued. The Cubbies took both games against the Mets yesterday. Doubleheader, one game 1-10-3, one game 2-10-5. Cubbies maybe back on the right track with a record of 43-37. Other notable finals, Cleveland beat the White Sox in extras 4-3 in Chicago. Colorado beat Boston 8-6. Also in the AL Central, we saw Tampa beat Kansas City 5-3. Yankees over the Tigers 4-2. And lastly, those Minnesota Twins at home, Shohei Ohtani on the mound, and as predicted, things did not end up with a win yesterday for Minnesota as they are swept by the Dodgers at home.
3 balls, 2 strikes, 2 outs in the ninth, winning run at the plate. Here's the pitch. Swung on and missed, and he struck him out. Tanner Scott fans Byron Buxton, and the Dodgers down the Twins by the final score of 4-3.
Nice effort for Minnesota in that final game. Their new record is 38-44. Shohei with another win under his belt. 8-2 the record. An absurd 1.58 ERA. Joe Ryan on the start, and how his fastball felt yesterday.
Yeah, I think just put it in good spots. That pitch is always going to kind of be the one I can throw it in spots where, like, if they swing, it's going to be favorable for me. So I think being able to make those adjustments and put the ball kind of protected a little bit more today. I feel like, I mean, that's a pitch I can throw a lot of times with my eyes closed. So I'm always comfortable with either that or the sinker. So,
And that's Joe Ryan. Minnesota falling to the Dodgers yesterday 4-3. LA moves to 52-29. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, Twins are off. They will open up a series coming up tomorrow against the Colorado Rockies. Certainly a lot more winnable series in front of them. Elsewhere today, Royals at Rays 11-10, Astros at Tigers 5-40, Cubs visit the Mets again at 6-10, Yankees at Red Sox 6-10 on Major League Baseball Network, and the Diamondbacks visiting the St. Louis Cardinals at 6:45. WNBA basketball, ugly game, ugly loss, physical confrontation, and more as the Indiana Fever go down and falling to Phoenix 111-109. Lot of drama in that one. Caitlin Clark dusted up quite a bit as the Fever fall to 10-8 on the season. Minnesota got a win. Nice fourth quarter effort, 28-18. They outscore Washington in a road win, 78-76. Natasha Howard leading the Lynx, 21 points and 15 rebounds in the win. Tonight in the WNBA, Wings at the Aces, 9 o'clock on NBA TV. And the NBA, the leader today as far as news, drama, stories, and storylines moving forward. And it all centers up on the Minnesota Timberwolves, Shams Charania, the trade that has sent LaMelo Ball to Minnesota.
The Hornets didn't go into this offseason saying, hey, we're going to trade LaMelo Ball. He's at the peak of his value, though, and he had a great end to the season. And the sides actually ended up having a good finish as far as their relationship. But when teams like Minnesota, Toronto start making offers and bidding, you have to listen. The Hornets have always been in the mindset to listen to offers for LaMelo Ball. And you think about it from the Minnesota perspective. This is a massive swing. Tim Connelly, the president, is not a stranger for taking risks. And the Rudy Gobert deal several years ago was a risk. That team ends up going to the conference finals with Rudy Gobert. He's impacted winning at a high level. There's obviously not the winning history for LaMelo Ball, but now you try to infuse yourself with as much talent as you can. They needed a point guard in the worst way.
There you go. Shams Charania talking about that trade. LaMelo Ball to Minnesota. A lot involved. Mostly his pick swaps, the players involved. You got Naz Reid going to Charlotte. That certainly could be a boost there. Also, Naz Reid could be moved if Charlotte were to go out and reconfigure this roster further. But Minnesota giving up a first-round pick, three pick swaps, and multiple second-round picks in the years ahead. Evan Cohen, pretty candid. He thinks Charlotte won this trade.
I got to be honest, if you're Charlotte, this is a hell of a deal because yes. Naz Reid is, they needed a big, and yeah. Naz Reid is a really good player and also has got that griminess that you want on a young team, kind of teaching these guys, this is how not only you play basketball, but this is how you play hard, and this is how you give everything of yourself to win. I kind of love this from a Charlotte perspective.
There you go, Evan Cohen. We always say can't grade the trade till a couple years out, but we always love to give opinion and grade the trades. That's one opinion saying that the Charlotte Hornets were the winner. Brian Windhorst on the Y for Minnesota.
Minnesota, this is a move to get Ant Edwards the kind of backcourt running mate that he needs. Ant Edwards was a guy that people, after Giannis getting traded, were like, is this the next star player to be traded? He has watched Karl Anthony Towns go to New York in a trade that ended up not working out and win a championship. Where is his mind, his head at? He's tired of being double teamed. They get him a dynamic scorer in the backcourt. You throw a double team in Ant Edwards with LaMelo Ball on the court, you are playing with fire. LaMelo will drop 10 three-pointers on you in the blink of an eye. And so this is what their move is. To accomplish this, they are basically emptying their coffers. They're giving up, because this is going to end up sort of combining with the Julius Randle deal. They're trading two of their three best big men. Okay, in a Western Conference where everybody's getting bigger, they're trading big for small here, you know, including Randle and Naz Reid, who's an incredibly highly respected and valued player, to Charlotte.
Right.
That's all for now. Brian Windhorst of ESPN talking about Minnesota, the why, the what, the who, and the how behind that deal. Again, nuts and bolts quickly here. The Charlotte Hornets are receiving Naz Reid. They're getting a 2033 unprotected first-round pick, 3 second-round picks in 2029, 2032, and 2033. Charlotte also gets first-round pick swaps if necessary in 2028, 2029, and 2030. For the Hornets, it's a pivot away from LaMelo Ball into Konkanipal. And for the Minnesota Timberwolves, it feels like a pretty good trade. You're getting a premium player, but what are you giving up here? You're giving up an advantage you've had for quite some time. I'm talking the big advantage, the rebounding, the glass, the interior, the paint control that Minnesota's had, and an advantage they've had over Denver and OKC and other teams in the Western Conference. That's going to go away quite a bit, you'd imagine. Rudy Gobert getting older, maybe some limited minutes, more limited minutes moving forward. Really going to depend on Yohan Berenguer to very much take up the mantle and the ancillary pieces for Minnesota. Dante DiVincenzo needs to be back and better than ever. Terrence Shannon Jr. needs to be ready to rumble. We'll wait and see what Minnesota can configure. But this team, this roster, immensely different now than it was just a few hours ago. Let's dive across the table now. Dustin Baker and the family back from an Italian vacation. Before we go any further, I want to hear about this trip. Then we'll hear about your opinion on the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Minnesota Vikings news of the day in the last couple of weeks. How was the trip for you guys, man? I'm very excited to hear about it.
Well, the trip was fantastic. We were there for, 11 or 12 days. And some of the takeaways that I'll never forget is it just didn't seem like they had clouds in Italy. Everywhere we went, it was sunny, and it was also hot, and I'm not a big fan of hot, so I had to get used to that. I even had like a like a thin t-shirt hoodie that I put over my head most of the time because it was so sunny and I didn't want to get my bald head sunburnt. But overall, we covered a lot of territory. We took public transportation for the most part, and if you ever see Italy on those best food in the world list, it is not overblown. It was incredible how every place you went, even to like a bodega, like they would have gourmet sandwiches that you could buy for 6 or 7 euros. So the food will be the biggest takeaway that I'll always have, because every time we sat down, it was like, what am I going to try here? It's guaranteed to be fantastic.
Take me through maybe some of the highlights food-wise for you. What was the best thing you ate for breakfast, lunch, dinner? Of course, I would imagine desserts were probably pretty rocking there as well.
Yeah, gelato was all over the place. They had more gelato stores than we have ice cream stores, especially in the tourist areas. Like you would, you know, walk, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes and you'd see 6 or 7 gelato little cafes. And that's, in my estimation, or how I consider it, it's slightly healthier ice cream. You know, most foreign food is slightly healthier than United States food, but the gelato was really good. In terms of breaking down, like for lunch or for breakfast, I'm not a big breakfast eater, but my wife would usually get espresso, because that's what they're known for. They get like shots, you know, almost like you're drinking booze. You go get a shot of espresso and then you leave that bar and you go on to the next one. For lunch, you could usually stop in at little spots without formally sitting down, because just like America, when you sit down, you know, with a group, you're gonna, your bills are guaranteed to be $100. But for dinner, it was always a fun quest to see where we're gonna go. Most of the menus had just a litany of pastas, as you would expect, and then pizza on every single menu. One thing I learned from waiters and waitresses is that the trope about pasta in Italy isn't just a joke. It's like with every meal, they have it almost as a starter kit. Like we're going to have pasta, and then what else are we going to have? So you'd sit down at meals. Your first course is to pick kind of your pasta that you want, and then like a meat entree. So when we were feeling it out, you know, I'd order spaghetti, and they'd say, okay, after that, do you want your steak or your chicken? Or so it was a good, it was an experience trying to figure out how it all went. They also had a lot of tiramisu. And then am I missing anything, Stone? Yeah, I always mispronounce this. Gnocchi.
Gnocchi.
G-N-H-O-C-C-H-I. Yep. My daughter got hardcore into that, I think, for 3 meals straight. So we're going to incorporate that into our home menu now.
I want to ask you this question, because I know families are different. You got picky eaters. You got exploratory folks. The phrase being, when in Rome, did you do as the Romans did? Did you try a bunch of different stuff? Did you go off the beaten path? And or is that not your style? Maybe that's your wife that is down to try all the new foods.
I always try new things. There are very few foods that gross me out. The only thing that comes to mind is blue cheese. Yeah. Like I just whenever I taste that.
No surprise, I like cheese. I'm from Wisconsin.
Well, I love cheese, but blue cheese, whenever I taste it, my brain says there's something not right about this. You got a bad batch. Blue cheese wasn't a huge thing in Italy, but it was there. So I always try everything no matter where I go, because I want part of the experience. And it's always funny, all of these vacations we take, I always encourage my kids, like, hey, if we're in Ireland, get the Ireland food. Don't just get something like burger you can get at home. And it was not a chore to remind them of that this time because the food was so delicious. It was actually, Bert, funny because by about day 7 or 8, when it was my turn to pick the restaurant, I started to explore, like, maybe we should, like, you know, look at a burger or a Japanese place to switch it up. And usually you're doing the opposite. If you're at Norway eating their very mediocre food, you're trying to find a place that's actually any good. Ireland, you're like, all right, let's, you know, should we try anything different? In Italy, we had to decide, do we just keep this heater, you know, going, this generational run of food, or do we want to switch it up? Ultimately, we went to every Italian restaurant imaginable. We did not switch it up, although Stone and Violet, they got a couple burgers along the way, and even those were delicious, they said.
I bet so. The Italian vacation behind the Baker family. Before we move off of that, I just had one additional question, because even if you're in the United States, you're on a road trip, and you're seeing this site or that or the world's biggest ball of yarn or whatever it might be, some tourist spots are overrated and some are underrated. Some exceed the hype. What comes to mind for you as far as places you saw, Leaning Tower of Pisa, other places that exceeded your expectations?
So I think Stone, if he gets on the mic next segment, will tell you about Pisa. That was not overrated. That was fantastic. You have to, if you want to go up, you climb a litany of stairs and you're doing it at an angle, almost like that fun house in Western South Dakota, like Cosmos, where you feel like you're, you know, in a trippy world. The thing that I think I was delighted by the most was the city of Venice. So I knew from pictures and encyclopedias when I was a kid and then various movies that it's the city on the water. And that's no joke. There are not cars in Venice. So you go there and it's almost like a grand version, like humongous historical version of San Antonio's Riverwalk. Everything is by the water. And so you're crossing, crisscrossing bridges over and over, over this river with all of the gondola boats that are beneath you. So every single step that you take when you're visiting Venice is near the water and there are zero cars. And I'll reiterate again, you can get the best food in the world while sitting next to a river and overlooking it. So I think our group collectively decided that Venice was the coolest spot. Even if we were just roaming around, there wasn't like a single thing. Like we went to the Colosseum in Rome, we went to the Vatican. There wasn't a single thing in Venice that we could hang our hat on, but the entire day or two was fabulous.
That's really awesome news. Excited to dive in a little bit deeper. Maybe Stone Baker cracking open the mic just next segment for a little bit deeper dive into the Italian vacation. But you wake up this morning and not your team, not the Minnesota Vikings, but the Minnesota Timberwolves are front and square in the news. What do you make of that trade? What do you think it signals about Anthony Edwards, future of the organization, as they are mortgaging quite a lot of the future? You can trade out really darn far in the NBA, and it looks like Minnesota is very much in the here and now, and some would say this is a desperation but exciting trade they made this morning.
Well, it's the latest chapter in Tim Connelly being risky, and I always admire that from a general manager. It's of note that all of the pick swaps you mentioned in the your opening segment, I don't think those can be traded now. Those are solidified, so they can't really make any more ginormous deals with any of those three picks. Here is my synopsis of this trade. I am lower on Naz Reid than the rest of Wolves Nation because I don't think his defense is very good. I understand the folklore, like, you know, just, hey, Channing has a name for no good reason, like Roll Tide in Alabama. That's fun. That's cool. But I don't think he's an absolute superstar. So trading him for LaMelo Ball to me is like, okay, I don't think that the Wolves gave up an outrageous price to get LaMelo Ball. But you have to wonder, is he finally going to play a full season in Minnesota? And will his defense improve? Those are huge question marks. I think if you're going to dislike this trade, the only reason to do that is to wonder, is this move what the Wolves need to combat the Thunder and Spurs? And I think most would say probably not, because those teams are too good. So I don't think, based on the assets that were exchanged, you'd see this and be like, oof, duh, the Wolves got killed here. You have to wonder if this was their one big move they're going to make over the next year, two or three. Is this enough to go win the championship? I think that verdict's up in the air.
All fair questions. And again, you and I were talking off air before the show got off and running. The why behind the Julius Randle trade now is pretty interesting. You move down in the draft, you push the salary out, that helps you bring in retain Iota Sunmu. And now you get LaMelo Ball coming in. The starting five for Minnesota is impressive. We can argue about positional fits later, but those five, as elite and talented as any starting five in the NBA. Question is about depth and the four spot, which might be now Jaden McDaniels, some combination with Rudy Gobert and others. Maybe you want Berenger can make the jump. What kind of overall feeling do you get about the immediacy of Minnesota as far as where they fit in, and also just that depth piece in the wake of this trade?
The good news about having to replace Nas Reed is it's similar to the safety spot in football, where you can usually look at the free agent wire and get a decent guy. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they have to start from zero and say, oh my goodness, are we going to have to make another trade to get a power forward? No, they'll be able to get one. The depth is a little bit suspect, but they have time to rectify that because we haven't really gotten to the offseason with free agency. We just had the draft. I like the move because it gives them a pound-for-pound starting five. It's going to be a little small now that they got rid of their two big guys in Julius Randle and Naz Reid, but Rudy Gobert will remain in the center or in the center spot. It doesn't quite put them in the pecking order with the Thunder and Spurs, but who else is really in that? I don't know of anybody. I'm still surprised that the Knicks found a way to win that championship so handily. So I don't know. If I had to grade it, I would say probably a B- because there's a lot predicated on LaMelo Ball. For some reason, all of a sudden becoming totally durable and more of a defensive player that he's never really shown that he's good at.
It's a lot on the table in that big trade. We'll recap it a little bit deeper later on in the show. We got a lot of Minnesota Vikings storylines to catch up on, including additional shakeups inside the Minnesota Vikings' new-look front office. Ryan Grigson, former Colts GM, who had been with the Vikings for a few years, he is out of the front office, and as of today, he's got a new job. We'll dive into that and other Vikings-related news, as well as a Italy recap with Stone Baker around the corner, we hope. We'll dive in to the Vikings news of the week, last couple of weeks, and so much more coming up next on this Thursday, June 25th edition of Overtime.
Stream us online, stream us on the app. Streaming now, Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Thursday, June 25th edition of Overtime. It is a busy day in the Minnesota pro sports scene, predominantly for the Minnesota Timberwolves. We will get to your latest Vikings news and nuggets, things you may have missed recently and more in just a moment. But time now to recap a little bit further the Italian trip. I was about to say road trip, but of course that is impossible. The Italy trip for the Baker family. Stone Baker going to be joining us on the mic here. But Stone, before we go to Italy, man, I got to know. You guys mentioned you've been watching a little bit more World Cup. Who is your favorite team? Who are you rooting for? I would just hope it's Team USA. And then who's second? But then outside of that, I got to know your opinion on flags. Who has the coolest flag that you've seen in action today? You got Turkey, USA, Australia, Paraguay, Netherlands, Tunisia, Sweden, Japan, Germany, and Ecuador. And for those of you out there saying, Bert, he doesn't know all those flags. Yes, he does. He knows all of these flags. Give me your rooting interest in the World Cup, as well as what flags you enjoy the most of teams and nations remaining in the World Cup.
What do I think is my coolest flag?
Yeah, coolest flag remaining. What do you think of the nations that are left? Again, Curaçao's got a pretty cool flag. Ivory Coast is, I'm pretty sure, identical to Ireland, but backwards. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's ton of other interesting nations still alive. Do you have a rooting interest? Who are you rooting for in the World Cup?
Portugal.
There you go. Are you a Ronaldo fan? Is that why?
Yes.
All right. So you got a Ronaldo jersey on right now also. So you got a couple goals. That's a big deal. They're very alive and well. And take me through the Italian trip for you, man. What was the coolest place that you saw? Best experience, best thing you ate, something of that nature. Give me something about the Italy trip for you that blew your mind.
And then the Leaning Tower of Pisa, like the stairs, you can literally feel the lean in the stairs.
Mm-hmm. So did you get the world famous tourist picture of you pretending to lift it up? Did anybody get that picture for you?
Yeah, we have multiple snaps. That I'll send it over to you. But yeah, we for sure got that one.
All right. What about food? Were you a gnocchi fan? I think I'm saying that correctly. Gnocchi fan, or were you more pizza? What was the favorite thing that you ate, whether it be breakfast, lunch, dinner, or dessert? What do you think?
I didn't try any gnocchi in Italy, so. But everything was good. But they had an ice cream flavor there, which wasn't, I don't think it's in the USA, so.
Which one was it?
It's probably in the USA, but this Nutella. I don't know.
Nutella. Yep.
Oh, okay. Nutella. Gotcha.
Yeah, I've never seen that.
Yeah, okay. they have it, but maybe not quite in gelato form as mass as it was in Italy.
All right, well. Okay, so good stuff over in Italy. Stone Baker, our guest here on a Minnesota Vikings Thursday edition of Overtime. Last time we had you in, we talked a little bit about some NFL trivia, a random generator you got on your phone. We'll see how your dad and I do today. Last time, I think we did all right. We'll go through three of them here and see what we can come up with. I hope that we don't get humbled here on our first Thursday back together, but let it rip with an NFL name that we should know, and we'll see what we can come up with here.
You got it? One thing I want to point out about Italy is, so we went to Norway in 2024 and Ireland mm-hmm. in 2025. And those countries, I don't think there was a single circumstance anywhere where speaking English was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly wasn't problematic in Italy. But Italy, like, we did not run into seamless English speaking. We had to translate with our phones at mm-hmm. time, like type in what we wanted. So I would say that most of the times we sat down, it was a challenge to communicate because they spoke their native language.
Yeah, certainly interesting stuff there. Stone, you got that up. What's the first name we need to know?
Well, this is probably going to be the easiest one for you.
Okay. So I know who he plays for. That's what you're telling me.
Anthony Belton.
Belton, gotcha. He's a Green Bay Packer. Future Hall of Fame guard tackle with the Green Bay Packers.
That is damn right.
All right, what's the next one?
Kevin Nola. Liz.
How do you spell it?
The last name mm-hmm. is just No and then the L-E-S.
Kevin Knowles?
And the first name is Kevin, K-E-V-I-N?
Yeah.
Mm. I don't know who that is.
I don't know who that is either. All right. Well, I'm going to go Philadelphia Eagles.
I will say Cincinnati Bengals.
And also, we're doing six.
Oh, okay.
And he's actually from the Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay. Kansas City Chiefs. Okay, fire away with your third one.
I do not know how to say this name, so it's D-O-H-N-T-E for the first name.
Dante.
Mm-hmm.
Last name's May and then Ers.
Dante Mayers.
M-A-Y-E-R-S?
No, E, like May, but with an E.
Myers.
Myers.
Dante Myers.
Dante Myers. This is embarrassing today, yeah. Man. You must have it on hard mode over there. random guess. I'm going to say Dante Myers is a Washington Commander.
I'll say New York Giant.
No.
All right. Who is it?
He's from the Cincinnati Bengals.
Cincinnati Bengals?
Gotcha.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, let's. Oh, you got one more for me?
I got three more for
you. Okay. I don't think we got time for
it. All right. Let's do one more. Yeah. One more. Let's see if we can get it right here.
This one. Like this one. Then. Okay. Xavier Hutchinson.
Oh, okay. Yep. I know this one. So you got to know this one.
Is he still wide receiver, Houston Texans?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Iowa State Cyclone alum, Xavier Hutchinson. Let's talk Minnesota Vikings, Dustin, as we wrap up a humbling trivia today. 2 out of 4 still isn't that bad, especially with the challenging names we got. Vikings latest news, front office shakeup and more. What you got for us this week?
All right, the latest news is Ryan Grigson is gone. He was a guy that Vikings fans often considered the boogeyman. And I think it's because Andrew Luck retired on his watch 6 years ago. And therefore, Grigson is the guy that's to blame. He was hired at the dawn of the Kwesi Mensah era. And anytime anything went bad and you didn't want to blame Kwesi, you just blamed Grigson. Well, he no longer works for the Vikings. I think they offered him a demoted job title, and he chose to go back to his Cleveland Browns, his former employer. So Grigson is out. I would say, based on the last time we talked 2 weeks ago, that the quarterback battle has changed a little bit. There's some more McCarthy momentum that was unforeseen in early June. Not necessarily that he's going to win the battle, but he is a contender in it. Dylan Bell was the guy ESPN nominated as the biggest mm-hmm. surprise from minicamp, and that's a continuation of, is it Steve Smith? Kirby Smart, all of these guys that know him say that he is kind of like a Deebo Samuel light. And wouldn't you know it, that the Vikings, they might have room at the bottom of the wide receiver roster for a playmaker like that, especially if Miles Price or Ty Felton are already on the roster bubble. But Dylan Bell, that's a name to remember when we get to training camp in 5 weeks. The Vikings also hired Ryan Pace as with a role within the front office. He's from the Chicago Bears. He isn't necessarily known for being fantastic, but in a lesser role, I don't think anybody's too upset.
Mm-hmm.
The Vikings also announced training camp dates. That'll be August 1st when fans can attend. Stone and I will probably head up there for the night practice on August 9th. And then who was it? I think CBS Sports or one of those sites came out with the rankings of offseason spending. And if it felt like that the Vikings were quiet outside of adding Kyler Murray, it's because they were. They spent the least of all of free agency. And that was after back-to-back years of spending bonanzas under Kwesi in 2024 and 2025. So the Vikings have reset their salary cap. When we get to next February and March, we won't look at some absolutely gruesome financial ledger.
Do you still feel like there's an opportunity for Nolan Teasley to come in here and in the first month or two or three on the job for him to make a move? Are the Vikings going to be in the conversation for one of these veteran splashes? Trevon Diggs, Marshawn Lattimore, Stephon Diggs, other guys that could become available. Minnesota making a move like that before camp. Would that surprise you?
No, I don't think it will be a huge trade because if they wanted to compile wonderful assets, they would not have traded Jonathan Greenard. Mm-hmm. And you have to think Nolan Teasley, first year on the job, a sweet 2027 draft class coming up. I don't think you're going to see him start trading all of his picks before he even gets to sniff a draft. But that does not rule out a free agent signing. They have about $13.3 million to spend. And I would say, we'll get into this in the next segment about edge rushers. If they're going to sign somebody that makes fans go, oh, sweet, they got that guy, it will be a pass rusher, you know, an outside linebacker. We're talking Joey Bosa. I guess he's going to retire. He might be off the list. Jadeveon Clowney, who's like a fit for every single NFC mm-hmm. North team. That's kind of funny. Leonard Floyd won a Super Bowl with Kevin O'Connell in 2021. So those kind of guys, edge rushers that are between 30 and 34, that can be signed for probably $7-8 million. If the Vikings make what we want to call a splash between now and, you know, mid-August, I would bet they add another veteran pass rusher who most football fans are familiar with.
Before we move on, dive into our final break of hour number one. We'll come back talking Brendan Sorsby briefly, rank up the Vikings defensive units, and talk about some other NFL news to get to. You mentioned training camp. You guys are out there more, usually every year, at least mm-hmm. For a little bit of time. If you were to describe that to some folks here in the Sioux Empire, Harrisburg, BV, out in Hartford listening, and of course here in Sioux Falls, that are saying, you know, I've never been to Minnesota Vikings training camp. What's it like? Is it kid-friendly? Is it fun? Is it entertaining? How do you grade out and rate out attending Vikings training camp as a family? What do you think?
It's absolutely kid-friendly. That's one of the coolest things about it. And it's affordable. I think it's like $10 a person, and it is the most accessible event if you want to get close to players and close to the actions that you can get as a matter of a bang for your buck. For example, it's open admission, general admission. You spend $10 if you get there early enough, and you don't even have to, like, you know, get in line or anything. You can go sit right down by the field. And then with these daytime practices, those usually last a couple hours. The nighttime practice, I think, opens up a few hours before the practice. So, yeah, I would fully recommend it for folks that want to learn more about football because you see the X's and O's in real time. And it's really easy to get autographs. It's easy to get close. And that's why we go every year. If it wasn't like that, then we wouldn't waste the trip.
You can find the Vikings training camp details as well as special events, ESPNSiouxFalls.com. Stone, you were calling for the microphone. What you got, my friend?
Vikings training camp is absolutely kid-friendly. They have, like, a whole field for kids to play on.
Yeah, right. He's been doing that every year. He was out there running 40s last time, right. seeing how fast he could go.
Probably faster than me and your dad, if we're being honest. Vikings training camp in front of the Minnesota Vikings. I got articles up on the Vikings and the Green Bay Packers at ESPNSiouxFalls.com. You can check out their open training camp dates, as in open to the public, as well as special events. Packers family night out there in the Titletown District, a.k.a. Lambeau Field, will be Friday, August the 7th. So keep an eye on that and so much more. ESPNSiouxFalls.com. When we come back, Brendan Sorsby locked out of the NFL for now. No supplemental draft. Should the Vikings have been interested? That was up for debate. But now we don't really have to worry about that. We're going to comment on Brendan Sorsby, rank up the Vikings defensive position units, and so much more when we come back to conclude hour number one. Minnesota Vikings Thursday continues after this on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
Don't miss a moment of local college and pro sports action. Stay connected and download the app for Overtime on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Moving right along on this Thursday, June 25th edition of Overtime, Minnesota Vikings Thursday. Dustin Baker, Stone Baker in studio. You can find the Vikings-related coverage, Vikes Now on YouTube, VikingsTerritory.com. We dove into the Vikings news of the day, news of the week. Ryan Grigson out, and now he's a member of the Cleveland Browns organization. Let's talk briefly about Brendan Sorsby. Of course, this is a mostly done deal, possible appeal, more legalese included down the line. But Sorsby, not going to be in the NFL this year, can't join as an undrafted free agent, cannot get into the supplemental draft. He'll have to wait till 2027 at the earliest to get in to the National Football League. What did you think of the Sorsby situation, the Sorsby sweepstakes, before we even knew the results of the supplemental draft appeal or application for Sorsby? What did you think of the player? And should the Minnesota Vikings have been near the top of the list to come calling for Sorsby?
Well, this is crime and punishment. He bet on sports. He bet on football. He bet on his own team. And those are usually cardinal sins that, I don't know, as recently as 5 years ago, you couldn't come back from. But now, because gambling is more immersed in our culture, I think we're more forgiving. You know, this was an odyssey as well. This went back and forth, whether or not he'd go into the draft, whether or not he'd go back to Texas Tech, blah, blah, blah. And it continues to be an odyssey because the NFL kind of shocked the masses and said, no, you're not taking part in this league. I want folks to remember about gambling, and in his case, gambling on sports, is, so yeah, he placed several bets on his team, or on teams, and then on his own team. When you gamble on your own team, it's usually, you don't usually do that like, you know what, hey, it's Wednesday, why don't we throw a bet down? It's because you are addicted, and your last resort is gambling on something that you can control. Mm-hmm. It usually signifies that the addiction has hit its next step or its end game, and I think that is why it's so criminal, is because if he's placing that many bets, he was severely addicted to gambling. I'm glad he's gotten treatment since. For the Vikings' sake, I'm all about second chances, including gambling addiction, but I don't know if I would have spent a second or third rounder, which was supposed to be the price once we got down to brass tacks in the supplemental draft. I'm ultimately okay with the fact that they've selectively chosen not to do this. I think it sends a good message, even though gambling is already everywhere. It also sets up a very intriguing draft stock for him, because we assume he can't play in the NCAA, or he can't go back now. He can't sign with any NFL team. When we get to next April, how on earth do you scout this guy? Because we know about his baggage. He won't be able to bounce back from it this year in college. So when we get to April, I wonder, is this going to be like a third rounder? They already have like 10 quarterbacks that are really good. It's going to be fascinating to see where he ends up. I'm glad that the Vikings didn't have to entertain this, because right now they already got too many cooks in the kitchen.
And certainly that debate is behind us. It was fun, though, for a little while to debate about the value, the landing spots, the who's, the what's, the where's, and the why's around that Brendan Sorsby situation. We don't have to worry about it, though. Sorsby's appeal, his application to the NFL supplemental draft, was denied. Let's rank up this Vikings defense. Before we left you, and before you left us and went international to Italy on the trip there, we talked about the Vikings offensive units. We ranked up interior offensive line, tackle, tight end, running back, backfield, quarterback, wide receiver, of course. Let's do it on the defensive side. I'll start here because there's a wide swath of opinions here. We're going to rank it based on interior defensive line, edge rusher, linebacker, corner, and safety. The fifth place unit for me could be your third or second place, but I've got it as interior defensive line just based on the fact that there's a lot of unknown there. That's really how I'm wrapping my head around it. Tyrion Ingram Dawkins, Levi Drake Rodriguez. Of course, you got Jalen Redmond. He's a known commodity. Good player. Wouldn't say great just yet, but good to very good player. And then you got the two mammoth rookies. Lot to love there moving forward. I've got IDL at five. You made a face because I knew that this would be wide and hard to determine. Where are you at with your fifth ranked unit?
All right, I did make a face because ours are going to be, we're going to have rare disagreement on air. So the single most challenging thing about this exercise, ranking the Vikings defensive units, is how to peg Jake Golladay, their second round rookie. If he is going to be more of an outside linebacker, so be it. He was drafted, at least on people's draft boards and draft scouting reports, as an inside linebacker. In the end, it'll probably be a conglomeration, a hybrid. He plays like Andrew Van Ginkle. But for now, for this exercise, I'm classifying him as an off-ball linebacker, an inside linebacker like Blake Cashman. So my weakest position, believe it or not, is edge rusher. The moment they traded Jonathan Greenard, they came down to Andrew Van Ginkle, Dallas Turner, And then who else? Bo Richter, Tyler Batty. Those are undrafted free agents who probably should just be depth guys. Tyrion Ingram Dawkins, it looks like he's going to move to the edge, or at least be a hybrid, and then back to Golladay. Maybe he will play on the edge. But for me right now, you have a proven commodity in Van Ginkel, who was also injured last year, and Dallas Turner, who finally gets his big chance to be a forever starter. To me, that's it. Like, after that, it's unknowns. Whereas 2 and 3 years ago, edge used to be the deepest spot on the defense. So right now, I guess I'm a little salty that I don't know who their third pass rusher is, which is why we talked about free agency in the last segment.
We are going to have a hilarity of disagreement in this segment. I'm going to go safety at 4. A lot of this hinges on Harrison Smith coming back. If he's back, of course, this will elevate. If he's not, I don't feel warm and fuzzy about safety in Minnesota. I've got that unit as my 4th best Vikings defensive unit. What about you?
So do I. So it's not quite as grandiose our disagreement as we might have thought. Here's where I'm at on safety. This is Brian Flores' sponsored roster construction. I think they're going to be just fine. But right now, if you just want to put labels on it, Josh Metellus, pretty good. Jay Ward, decent, big year ahead, contract year. Theo Jackson, mid. Jacoby Thomas, rookie, we don't know. And Harrison Smith, I think, will probably be back, but then you wonder if that's going to be limited snaps, if he's going to, you know, play the whole time. So pound for pound, that is a decent group that you just tell yourself Brian Flores knows what he's doing and therefore ranks 4th on my rankings. It's not a group that is to die for, but it also doesn't have glaring holes.
This is very difficult compared to the Vikings offense. We'll note that again here. What is your 3rd rated unit? Because for me, I've got it at cornerback. What do you think?
That's what I have as well. I actually like this cornerback group because last year they rolled into the regular season at CB3 with Jeff Okuda. And I knew that guy wasn't going to be good, but fans kept saying, well, hey, he's going to break out. And it's like he would have done that in the previous 5 seasons. So at Byron Murphy, Isaiah Rogers, James Pierre, really underrated acquisition from the Steelers and free agency, and then Charles Dimmings, who I think even you like.
Mm-hmm.
That's 4 guys that are pretty good. There have been Viking seasons, believe it or not, where you go into it with 2 guys and that's it, and then you have a bunch of scrubs behind them. An underrated factoid of Vikings football is last year Byron Murphy and Isaiah Rogers were completely healthy from cover to cover. There's like this regression to the mean of injuries that's supposed to happen or probably should. And I like that they have Pierre and Demings in the house to make up for that.
All right. So for me, this is going to be funny because I've got your worst ranked unit as my top ranked unit. I've got edge at 1, linebacker at 2. Linebacker, I like. I don't love the frontline starters. I don't love the second stringers, but what I do love is the depth that they have there. I think that's the deepest unit, that or corner, up for debate on the Vikings roster. I think linebacker has the most play time and upside mixed in with that unit. So linebacker, I feel warm and fuzzy about. And then pass rusher, my methodology is frontline starters are pretty recognizable good players. We'll see about Van Ginkel's health, but I like the Vikings pass rush. But to your point, something I didn't really think about too much is that edge depth is pretty darn light and frankly inexcusably light right now for Minnesota. So I've got it a little backwards, edge 1, linebacker 2. How do your final top 2 shake out?
My 2nd deepest is defensive tackle, and I think I know why you and I have the difference. I'm not kidding, Bert. There were years not long ago where we look at the depth chart and we're like, huh, our defensive tackles are Armin Watts and Jonathan Bullard. And we're like, oh, okay, I guess that just has to work. Mm-hmm. And I used to write articles. I used to tweet, like, you're allowed to go get a good defensive tackle. We don't just need these placeholder guys. They finally listened. They have Jalen Rebben, who emerged out of nowhere as a stud. You have the depth guys that you talked about with Levi Drake Rodriguez. And then they swung for the fences with the Caleb Banks pick, who looks like he's going to be ready for training camp. And Dominique Orange, who I think is going to be a stud as a nose tackle. So the reason that this is higher on my list is because I'm like, finally, they got the message. They have 3 defensive tackles who you can hang your hat on. The deepest for me is inside linebacker, especially if Jake Golladay plays more snaps at that position than on the edge. Because let's face it, Blake Cashman, he's good for 100-something tackles per year. Eric Wilson had a career renaissance last year. Ivan Pace is still aboard. And then Golladay, the 2nd rounder. That group is so deep that if Cashman sprained his ankle and Wilson had a hamstring, you'd look around and say, all right, Ivan Pace and Jake Golladay, that can work for a couple games. In years past, and on a lot of teams, you'd have 2 linebacker injuries and be like, oh my God, what are we going to do? So for me, that foursome makes this the deepest spot on the defensive roster.
There you go. Vikings defensive rankings here, Thursday, June 25th. Let's talk brief NFL news. We roasted J.J. McCarthy, we being society, for dubbing himself 9. Now you get Caleb Williams dubbing himself Iceman. And much to the humor and happiness of you and I today, according to ESPN.com, Williams' trademark Iceman has been denied. What do you think about that? And in addition, let's talk about Brandon Ayuk and that weird situation with the Niners, and he wants to play for the Commanders so bad. He keeps making videos of him screaming about the Commanders. Iceman first, Ayuk second. What do you think about those scenarios?
If you're going to trademark something, then it has to be unique. Mm-hmm. And there are movies, there are songs, albums. I mean, there are all kinds of things that are already named Iceman. Mm-hmm. And so that nickname is already widespread. It reminds me of, 4 years ago or so when LeBron James had a video or TikTok that where he was doing Taco Tuesday, mm-hmm. and that took off, and it was like he tried to trademark that. It's like, well, you can't trademark that, my man. That's already a thing. That's what reminds me of what's happening with Iceman and Caleb Williams. It'll be cool to see how he continues to develop from a Bears standpoint, because he certainly has the memorable throw in the playoffs. But other than that, he still feels like he's a work in progress. It's a cool nickname. I'll give him that. It's just that it's already been used. Mm-hmm. And then on Brandon Ayuk, I didn't realize he'd go off the deep end like that.
I think it's getting to concerning territory.
Yeah,
frankly.
like you can't speculate on what it is. He never looks like drunk or loaded in these videos, but it's you have to wonder if it's something where he has an undiagnosed mental thing. And that's what I wonder as to why he keeps doing this on his phone, posting kind of these strange videos. The guy was a next big thing recently as a year or two ago. So I hope for his sake that somebody puts a lid on him and says, just go play football, man.
Yeah.
He's on the 49ers roster legally, and he's already campaigning. Like, he's holding the Commanders football. That's really strange.
Uh-huh.
And any other situation, you'd be like, oh, my gosh, the NFL going to penalize him for that? But for him right now, I think we're just hoping that he's okay. And I don't know why the 49ers still employ him. Like, it'd be the easiest thing just to cut him. Nobody's going to trade for him.
It might just be a bad blood scenario, too, of like, you know what? You're not going to show up to our facility for 6-8 months. Again, allegedly in recovery from this injury. We're giving you the assets in order to get back on the football field. Something happened along the way that crossed the wires that hurt the feelings, clearly, between the organization and the player. And now I feel like the organization is maybe, again, my opinion, maybe playing a little get back of like, we're not going to cut you till the absolute 11th hour, especially if you're going on social media acting like this. And in addition to all of this, I can't imagine that DC is saying, yeah, can't wait to get that guy on my team when he's doing that. You got to be thrilled that somebody wants to play for you. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But putting out these videos after videos and then also bringing into the conversation of tampering and, okay, what is DC saying to Brandon Ayuk? Why does he want to play there? I think San Francisco may have an argument for the NFL to just say, hey, can you take a look at that? It's very concerning stuff for Ayuk.
Yeah, that'd be the cherry on top if the Commanders lost like a fifth or sixth rounder because of tampering. Yeah, they'd probably just have to sell it in the sense that Ayuk wants to play here. Mm-hmm. He's got a connection there. It's also worth noting that the 49ers, not long ago, Super Bowl-bound 49ers, had Deebo Samuel, Juwan Jennings, and Brandon Ayuk as their trio. They didn't play a whole lot together, but that was their group for a while, and now that's gone. All of it's gone, unless Deebo re-signs there. It's Mike Evans, Ricky Pearsall. Which veteran did they get? Christian Kirk, or did they get one of the...
Well, Mike Evans, I think they got Christian Kirk there as well.
Yeah,
let me look that up.
Yeah, it's Mike Evans, Ricky Pearsall, the stribbling rookie, and then they got one of those like
Jacob Cowing is on that roster too.
They got one of those veterans from the Jaguars days. I can't remember if it's Christian Kirk. I think it's Christian Kirk.
All right, I'm pulling it up as we speak. Ourlads.com, place to go if you want to look at depth chart. Evans, Pearsall, Christian Kirk, DeJuan Stribling, Jordan Watkins, Jacob Cowing, DeMarcus Robinson also on that roster.
Oh, wow, so, okay. Yeah, they got it's a whole new day at wide receiver in San Francisco, and that's noteworthy because with the trio they had, you know, did a lot of damage and got them to the Super Bowl a couple times.
There's your latest and greatest from the National Football League. Iceman will not be coming to Chicago, at least not officially, not a trademarked Iceman. That is Dustin Baker of VikingsTerritory.com. Until a couple of weeks away, I'm off next week, so we'll be talking to you a couple of weeks from now, my friend. All the best till then.
Yeah, and we'll be dangerously close to training camp then, so I look forward to it.
All right, latest and greatest Viking news, VikingsTerritory.com. You can find the open practice schedule, special event schedule for the Minnesota Vikings over the summer at ESPN Sioux Falls. We take a break, reset the top of the hour on a Thursday at noon. Headlines and highlights as we also dive into the NBA shakeup this morning, Major League Baseball, World Cup news, NFL latest, and of course, the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's all in front of us on a Minnesota Vikings Thursday edition of Overtime that continues right after this.